Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, before we get into the episode, a big thanks to all the patrons on Patreon. We just got Mario joining us from Switzerland. Hey Mario, thank you for being my latest patron on Patreon. I mailed out a Talking Metal mask, a Talking Metal t-shirt, I threw in a pin for you, so watch out for that package. It should be heading over to Switzerland soon. It left my hometown here in Maplewood a couple days ago. So Maplewood, New Jersey, United States. So hopefully you'll get that soon. Also, big thanks to Lou Valcourt up in Canada. Lou, hope you're doing well. Andrew Miller, Jeremy Weltman, Chris Riley, Johan Enderstrom, Steven Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Gregory Muse, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo from Alaska, Brad Dahl from Utah, Richard Langridge, Dan Gurwan, Jerry from Long Island, Sam Soupy, Drake, no last name for Drake, it's just Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Steven Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blas, Anthony Mackey. How are you, Anthony? James Bennett. By the way, Anthony, I checked out that podcast you were talking about, that like sex podcast. It was good. It was good. I listened to a full episode the other day. Thanks for recommending it. Forgot what it was called, but James Bennett. I said that right. David S. Gray, Fred Rutz, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, Jean Bouvari, and Metal Dan. Thanks, guys. You make this show happen. You are the supporters on Patreon. If you're listening to this show and you don't support me on Patreon, please consider it. There's a bonus podcast that goes up there every week that I do with Victor Ruiz from the Mars Attacks podcast. It's exclusive to the people on Patreon, and you get to hear that every week with as little as a $2 a month donation. So and that ends up being like, what, 50 cents for a bonus podcast every week. And I always have fun doing those. I let loose a little bit. I say things I might not say here because it's a very private show. That is the Mark Striegel podcast, available exclusively for the patrons on Patreon. All right, here we go. Joey Vera is our guest today.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and anything else we feel like. We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Clouds rolling white.
All right, some old school Armored Saint right there off of the Delirious Nomad record. Today's guest is Joey Vera from Armored Saint. Great little chat with him. I can't wait for you to hear this. And they have a great new record out, Punching the Sky. I love it. I love it. Joey, of course, also plays with Fate's Warning, who also have a record out. Let's listen to that right now. This is Scars by Fate's Warning. Fate's Warning here on Talking Metal. Without further ado, let's get into my interview with Joey Vera of Armored Saint. Trying to do a podcast, people yelling in the background. Typical COVID life. Can't stand it. Anyways, here we go. Some brand new Armored Saint, followed by my interview with Joey Vera. Striegel, and for the first time ever on the podcast, we are talking with bassist Joey Vera. Joey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for some great new music. Two new albums hitting almost simultaneously. We have Long Day Goodnight by Fate's Warning, and of course the great album by Armored Saint, Punching the Sky. Digging both of these albums and want to definitely catch up with you on both of them. But first, you know, we're obviously in a strange time here. COVID has kind of just thrown things into chaos for a lot of us. How are you personally dealing with things?
You know, Broad stroke answer is that I'm fine. My family's fine. My friends are fine. The bands I'm in are fine. You know, we're consider myself one of the lucky ones. I know that it's affected a lot of people in a really negative way. So I'm aware of that, and I consider myself pretty lucky. So everything's cool on our end. You know, going through the normal stuff that everybody else is, you know, with the doom scrolling and the,
right,
you know, the emotional part of it and the psychological part of it, I'm not immune to that. But, you know, try to find ways to stay positive and stay healthy and, you know, just look on the bright side that this will come to an end shortly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've heard a vaccine is on the way. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that that's a sign of hope,
yeah,
for us, you know?
Yeah. And I think it is, you know, it was always a question of when, I think, you know, and so at least we have some sense of when, you know what I mean? So that's a big ray of hope for everybody.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
a lot of bands have decided to delay albums, to delay new music, because they can't tour at the current time. But I have to thank you because you've given us, again, two great new albums. I'm sincerely digging both of these. And
cool.
Congratulations on Punching the Sky by Armored Saint, a top 40 Billboard album. That's pretty impressive at this stage in your career. I mean, that's awesome.
I know. My parents are freaking out. You know, they're like, oh, you know, they're so proud of me. I'm like, you know, I'm a few years shy of 60 at this point, and they're like, I can't believe it. This is amazing. You know?
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, top 40 Billboard album, albums at this point, most of these albums don't even have guitar on them. So I'm thrilled that the fans are supporting you guys and that it's being received so well. That's awesome. And this is an album that you aren't just the band member, you produce this album.
That's right. I've been producing the Armored Saint records, for quite a while. The first kind of co-production I got was with Symbol of Salvation in 91 but Dave Jordan was the one who spearheaded that whole direction and the producing, but he gave me co-producing credit, based on my involvement, which was very nice of him. But yeah, I've been producing, Armored Saint, pretty much since then.
And when you go in as the producer of a band that you're also a member of, do you kind of have to take a step back from being a band member and look at it through maybe a different lens?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think I have a pretty good, ability to be really, objective, you know? So, for me, during the whole process, I'm doing that, you know, I'm the, you know, pretty much the chief songwriter along with John Bush. And so even from the get-go in the beginning, I try make a really big effort to step outside of a circle and look in, you know, try to see what it looks like outside, you know, and I try to do it through the whole process all the way through, even when it comes time to be my own performances. Let's say that's maybe the hardest thing with the guitar players and harp on them. You know, you're not doing it right. You can do better. That's me, you know, and don't have anybody cracking the whip on me. So, I admit that's the hardest part for me is when it's just me and doing my own bass parts, you know? So I got to pay extra attention at that time when I'm doing that. But you know, other than that, it's not that hard for me to step outside of the circle and to look at it objectively. I'm always looking at the big picture. And I think that even sometimes band members have the harder time doing that because band members oftentimes are more concerned about their part in it, their right, contribution, and they fail to see the picture. They fail to see that this is a song and it's bigger than just your part, you know? So You know, and I get it. You know, I'm the same way. It's kind of part of our ego and our vanity, and I get it. I think for me, since I'm part of the creator in the beginning, and I have lived with it for so long, you know, it's easier for me to step outside.
Right, right on. Joe, you're cutting out there just a little bit. I'm wondering if it might, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you good.
The one thing that has impressed me always with Armored Saint is just the song structures, the hooks, the songwriting, I guess. And when you and John are writing, how much of a struggle is it? How much do you have to go back and forth? Do you dump ideas? Like, what is the songwriting process like for you guys?
Well, it's usually, to be honest with you, most of the time, and I wouldn't say all the time, but I'd say a lot of the time, the songs come relatively easy. I sometimes say that the songs write themselves, and I just have to sort of help them along in places. But most of the time, they really write themselves, and I'm not really sure why or how that is, but it just feels like that to me. But our process is maybe a little unusual than a lot of other bands or groups. The songs, usually the nucleus starts with me alone, and I usually write a song. Just like I said, the songs usually come to me in full form fairly quickly, like intro, you know, first verse, second verse, chorus, whatever the arrangement is, and it just usually lays itself out pretty quickly. I'll then, once I'm happy with what I think is an interesting song, at least, I'll make a demo of it. And I make a fairly elaborate demo right away. Tons of overdubs. I play all the instruments. I play mock leads. You know, I program the drums so it sounds like a human and not just a drum machine. I make it very elaborate, lots of effects and stuff. And then I give it to John Bush. And so when he gets it, he's almost like, wow, you know. So it really helps him get inspired to write lyrics and melodies. And he usually pops it in his car and drives around town for a few days, jots down notes and sometimes lyrics. Then he comes to my house, and then we basically put down all of his ideas. And it's at that point where it's kind of like the first stage of the fine-tuning begins, once the vocals come in, because I think the vocals really dictate all songs, really, mostly. And so once he comes in, then we start to figure out stuff. And that's when we either sometimes say, okay, this is great as it is, or sometimes we make adjustments like this part needs to be longer, this is too short, this is sort of fat, doesn't belong here, you know. And that process is usually pretty easy. Out of all the songs on Punch in the Sky, I would say maybe we went back and kind of, like, as you say, going back to the drawing board in a way on like two or three of them, but all the rest were like pretty much like they pretty much happened all on their own really quickly.
And I mean, there are so many good songs on this record. We definitely highly recommend Punching the Sky by Armored Saint to our listeners. I checked out the music video for Missile to Gun, which just great. And I love seeing music videos where there's a kind of like a little concept going on, because so many music videos nowadays, it's just a band on like a soundstage. So I love the whole video game, but yet live action, female fighter vibe. Can you talk a little bit about the concept or just about the video in general?
Yeah, sure. It was directed by Robert Graves, who did our first single, End of the Attention Span, also. And, you know, him and I really hit it off back in August when we were doing the first video for End of the Attention Span. And we really got into the narrative, you know, and we saw eye to eye on just about everything. And we had great conversations. And so when it came time to do Missile the Gun, I called him right back up and said, hey, you know, let's do this again. And so we started firing off some narratives about it. And the song, it's funny because the song lyrically when you first hear it, you kind of think it's really about maybe like an arms race or a nuclear arms race or a battle between two men, basically, and their power. And it kind of is, but the underlying theme really is that it's a peace song. And this is according to John Bush, because I kind of had to read between the lines myself, but it really is kind of a peace song. And so we decided that, Robert and I, that we wanted to tell this side of the story, that the crux of the whole thing is you know, coming to an agreement and not necessarily settling our differences, but being cool with our differences and having a handshake on that and saying, okay, you can be on this side and I can be on the other side, but we can still coexist, you know. So we wanted to try to tell that story in that way visually, but also kind of do it with a little bit of tongue in cheek, a little bit of fun, which is why it was important for me, and this was my kind of idea, was that I wanted to take it out of reality and I wanted to put it in a sort of a virtual reality. I didn't want it to be very, I didn't want it to be necessarily only about this one thing. I wanted to leave the interpretation open. And then Robert came back to me and said, well, what if, he loved it. And he said, well, let's try to do it in sort of a video game world. And also have even though lyrically it says man to man, let's make man meaning mankind, not necessarily males, but mankind. And so let's have females be the projectors of that. And I said, that's brilliant, you know. And I said, I'm way into girl power. So we just kind of had meetings back and forth about it. And the concept came together through several conversations. And he went out and he found these amazing stunt women, and they were so enthusiastic that they worked out that whole, all of their stunts and the choreography, and it just turned out really great, and we loved it.
Yeah, it really is great. It's an excellent watch. Again, we're talking about the music video, Missile to Gun. Definitely check it out, guys. I do want to talk about Fate's Warning, but before we leave Armored Saint, let's talk Delirious Nomad's 35-year anniversary just happened for that, man. I got to tell you, that was such a big record for me, because I was into March of the Saint because I had seen, like, Can You Deliver, I think, on Friday Night Videos or something, and I bought that. But for me, Delirious Nomad, there was like an edge to it, like almost like a harder, rougher edge. I don't know if it's the production or the songs, but it was something that really connected with me as a teenager. Just loved, even the album artwork was so powerful and strong. What do you remember about that album? I know Max Norman worked with you guys on it. Any, like, I'm talking like 2 minutes or so memories that you could share of putting that together?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I agree with you. Delirious for me is probably my favorite of the Chrysalis years. And it's for the reasons that you basically explained. And it came to be that because of some things that we went through. We got signed fairly young. We were a young band, had only been together for maybe a year before we got offers from major labels. So we were just young pups when it all happened. And when we made March of the Saint, our debut record, we basically were like naive. We had no idea what we were doing. We let the record company hire a producer that we didn't necessarily see eye to eye with. And in the end of the process, we weren't very happy with the production side of March of the Saint. We felt like it didn't really represent us as a band, as the way we sounded live and in our 19-year-old minds and all that. But we also learned a lot about the first year being in the business on a major label. Everybody's sticking their hands in the pie and pulling you in different directions. And suddenly you feel like you're losing control. And so Delirious for us was like was our sort of like answer back. It was our rebellion. We were very adamant about who we were going to hire to produce it. And we immediately went to Max Norman because of his work with Ozzy Osbourne, Loudness and Sabotage. We loved the sound of those records. They sounded dangerous, you know, they sounded heavy. And that's what we felt like our first record should have sounded like. So we got together with Max, and then we wrote we used a lot of songs that we had written during the March of the Saint years, like prior to getting signed. So some of those songs were left over from our club days, and a lot of them are just dark songs and heavy songs and, you know, quote unquote, maybe non-commercial sounding songs,
right?
Which kind of irked the company a little bit. And so that was why that record has that vibe to it, because we were purposefully kind of rebelling against what we'd gone through. And we had a great time working with Max. He was a British guy, and we were stoked because of that too, because we you know, new wave of British heavy metal aside, we grew up listening to nothing but British European bands. I mean, UFO, Thin Lizzy, you know, Ozzy, you know, Sabbath. I mean, all of them, Deep Purple, you know, the list goes on. So working with Max in that way was also great. And he was very easy to work with. And, you know, we're super proud of that record. And, you know, it'll always have that special place because it was like our record. You know, this is the one we wanted to make. You know?
Right on. Right on. Cool. And I know we have limited time, so I do want to touch upon the New Fates Warning record, which is awesome. Long Day, Good Night. Last time I saw you live was with Fates Warning at Irving Plaza in New York City with Queensryche. Wow, what a great double bill that was.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So much fun. Sold out at Irving Plaza. Yeah. Great stuff. But anyways, psych the new records out. Can you talk a little bit about the record, maybe who produced it, when it all came together?
Sure. The record is produced by Jim Matheos again. He's been producing Fates records for quite a while as well. This time we hired Joe Baresi to mix it, who's a great engineer, and he really brought a whole nother level to the record. And so we were stoked to have him on board as well. Jim and Ray wrote some great songs. They're amazing. The fans are just going nuts over it. It's been great. We did the record kind of virtually because we all live in different parts of the world. So it was a email record, if you will, because we had to do tracks wherever everybody lives in different places. I got the tracks for me right after on the heels of finishing Armored Saint. So I did my parts in the spring, in April, basically end of March into April. And I was the last one to do my parts. Everyone else had finished their parts, and Ray Alder did his parts. He lives in Madrid, Spain, and it was during lockdown in Spain, and he wasn't allowed to leave his house. So he literally had to move into the studio. He took like clothes and like, you know, a cot and a sleeping bag. And he lived in the studio for 2 weeks because it was against the law to be on the streets.
Wow.
So he did his parts living in the studio for 2 weeks at the end of their lockdown in Madrid. All the parts, everyone's performances are just amazing. Everybody's super proud of the record, and it's getting great reviews. So it's a cool record. It's
absolutely,
you know, people ask me, you know, how is it, what is it like? You know, I say, you know, it's so hard for me because I'm inside of this thing. But I would say it's just, you know, it feels to me like just another natural progression from Theories. And, you know, there's just, you know, it's got a little bit of everything. There's some great, amazing prog moments. And then there's also some real great simplicity in it, you know, that really, really shines beautifully, you know, some really simple songs and great melodies and great performances and great lyrics. It's a really cool record.
Some cool special guests too. Gavin Harrison doing some drums, right?
Yeah. Gavin had to play on one song. It was really just a schedule conflict that we had with Bobby Jarzombek, who's our drummer, obviously. And he also plays with Sebastian Bach, and there was this one week that just kind of threw a monkey wrench into the whole thing of him completing all the songs. And there was this one small part, this song. It's not like a big long song, but it's a song that Bobby just literally couldn't get to in time because of the schedule conflict, and we discussed a lot of different things, and finally Jim was able to get in touch with Gavin, and Gavin contributed the parts for this song. So it worked out in the end, and Bobby was totally fine with it. I mean, you know, it's Gavin after all.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, I know we got to wrap things up, but I mentioned to my patrons on Patreon that we're going to be doing an interview with you, and they were all curious about your involvement with Merciful Fate and just a little bit about your history with King Diamond. Can you talk about where things stand with that?
Sure. There's not a whole lot I can say. I mean, real quick, I've known King for quite a while. Armored Saint did a tour with them back in 88, 89, and we've been label mates for a long time. So I would occasionally run into King every now and then. We've been friends for quite a while. And it was when a couple of years ago I was on tour with Fates. In fact, I think it was that tour you're mentioning with Fates and Queensryche. And we went through Texas, and King came out to see us with Brian Slagle from Nettleblade Records, of course. They came backstage and they came to see the show, and King pulled me aside that night and he told me what was going on with Timmy, original bassist, and asked me if I would be able to fill in for Timmy just in case he was too weak from his procedures that he was going through at the time. And initially I said, well, I mean, my jaw was on the floor, you know, I'm honored, and oh yeah, it would be amazing, of course, thank you. And then of course a month or so later, the terrible news came. And along the whole time, I'm thinking in my back of my mind, like, oh, you know, he's going to pull through, it'll be fine. But right. If it happens, if he can't do it, I'll try to be ready. And then it turned out he went south, and it was the worst thing ever. And a couple months later, I got another call, and they said, well, you know, we're going to move forward. And I said, well, I did tell you I would, and I keep my word. So, you know, of course, COVID came down right at that moment, and it all got postponed. As far as I know, it's still on the books for next summer in festivals in Europe. I do have the set list.
Okay.
I've probably gotten maybe halfway through it.
Okay.
There's a lot to learn, let me tell you, like so many parts, and it's like, oh, this isn't like AC/DC music, you know, it's like,
yeah.
There's tons of music.
Cool.
But another note real quickly, you know, like for me, it's like, it's surreal for me. It's because when I was first coming up from 80, 81, and Armored Saint was first getting started, I got involved in the tape trading thing. Back then, people who don't know, we used to trade cassette tapes from and have pen pals all over the world, and you would share local bands or whatever. And so I had pen pals in Europe, and one of the first tapes I got was Nuns Have No Fun, the first EP for Merciful Fate back
wow.
in 81. And so this was, you know, Armored Saint was just getting started, and we were jamming and playing clubs or whatever. And I played the crap out of that first EP. I mean, I was a huge fan of it, you know. And then, of course, subsequently, you know, Merciful Fate became a great band and made great records after that, and I was into that as well. But just that moment of being kind of a fanboy in 81, you know, and then fast forward when I stopped to think about it now, and I'm like, holy crap, like I'm going to be playing a lot of these songs on stage with King
so
and
cool.
Hank.
Yeah.
It's insane. I'm like, if this actually happens, because it hasn't actually happened yet. I mean, it sounds good, it's on paper, but if this actually happens, I'm just going to like kick myself in the ass and go, dude.
right on. Cool. Well, Joey, I know we're over our time, so final quick question is, when's the last time you heard from Tommy Lee?
Wow. That's a good question. You know, what's funny is I haven't actually spoken with him in a very long time, but
right.
I've seen him. We live in the same area. Like he lives in the town right next to me. And I saw him once in a Babies R Us.
Okay.
But he was like on the other end of the store. And my wife and I were on the other end. And I was like, hey, hon, there's Tommy over there with his wife. And she goes, go say hi to him. I'm like, nah, it's probably been like
decades.
25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been years and years and years.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, you know, our worlds have just gone separate ways, you know. We're not in the same circles really yet. I haven't really been on a bill with him, you know. That might be another situation. I haven't crossed paths with him in that sense in decades. It's been a long time.
Yeah. And you guys used to jam a lot, I guess, when you were younger, right? And I know you, I think, made the Pages of the Dirt, right? You're in there.
Yeah. So. We were in a local band together for, it wasn't that long, about 9 months. And we were in a band together, and we have a small history. And I was there when he met Nikki for the first time, and they, we're discussing starting a new band called Motley Crue. I was there at their first meeting, and it was,
wow.
It was pretty crazy. The story in the dirt isn't exactly right. Vince tells the story in the dirt. He says that I was on Tommy's motorcycle, which is not,
okay.
Which isn't true. It was in a person's car that we were with, and Tommy was driving, but it wasn't even Tommy's car. But it conjures up a weird image of me with on the back of Tommy's motorcycle.
Yeah.
Faster, Tommy, faster.
Right on.
That did not happen.
I gotcha. Cool. Well, I've heard that about numerous stories from the dirt, but yeah. So
it's partially accurate.
Partially accurate. I like that. All right, Joey, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for your time. And we cannot wait to get you back out on the road and back here in the New Jersey and New York area. I would love to see Fate's Warning tour with Queensryche again. I don't know if that would be a possibility, but that was such a great combination.
They're a great band. They're great friends of mine too. Armored Saint also did a tour with them, and I just love those guys. They're all great people. Love them. And we're all dying to get on the road, period, with anybody. So I hope this all opens up soon and we can actually do that.
Absolutely. Me too. And great speaking with you. Best of luck.
Yep.
Please keep in touch.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
A pleasure.
Talk soon. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
That's A Gun by Armored Saint. Brand new Armored Saint here on Talking Metal. I want to thank everyone on Patreon who chimed in with some of your favorite deep cut Iron Maiden songs. I asked people to name three Iron Maiden songs that were not on the Best of the Beast Greatest Hits album. We got just some excellent responses. Metal Dan, To Tame a Land, or a song that was about the Dune book, actually. I don't know if you know that, Metal Dan. Women in Uniform, which was a cover, great cover, with Deano on that. Two great ones, Metal Dan. Chris Riley mentioned Ghost of the Navigator, Stranger in a Strange Land, and Women in Uniform, another one voting for Women in Uniform. Awesome picks. Jeremy Weltman, Flight of Icarus, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. I don't know if I'd consider Flight of Icarus a deep cut, but that's just me. Two great ones, Jeremy. Johan Enderstrom, The Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, Flight of Icarus, For the Greater Good of God. Yeah, man, that's a great one. You know what? I'm going to play that one as soon as we're done here. Victor Ruiz says Power Slave, Sea of Madness, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. Mike Jones mentions Total Eclipse. That was a B-side. Flash of the Blade off of Power Slave. Good ones, Mike. Leo from Alaska says Rime of the Ancient Mariner, Stranger in a Strange Land, The Prisoner. Honorable mention, Infinite Dreams. Hard to pick just three. Anthony Mackey says Revelations, Murder in the Rue Morgue, The Duelist. Ah, that's a real deep one, Anthony. Love it. Love The Duelist. Stephen Saylor, Still Life, To Tame a Land, The Wicker Man, all good ones. Metal Dan, I said those. So yeah, some great response from my friends on Patreon. Let's do the song I just mentioned. The Greater Good of God, as requested, not requested, as mentioned by Johan. Thanks, Johan.
Are you a man of peace or man of holy war? Too many sides to you, don't know which anymore. So many full of life, but also filled with pain. Don't know just how many will live to breathe again. A life that's made to breathe destruction or defense. A mind that's feigned corruption, bad or good intent. A wolf in sheep's clothing, a saintly or sinner. Are some that would believe a holy war winner? They fire off many shots and many parting blows. Their actions beyond the reason only God would know. And as he lies in heaven, or it could be in hell. I feel he's somewhere here, I'm looking for Miller, but I don't know. Please tell me that I'm
cross to die for all of those who never mourn his loss. It wasn't meant for us to feel the pain again. Tell me why. Tell me why.
A little maiden here on Talking Metal. I was on Twitter. My Twitter handle's at Talking Metal. Please follow me there. And I threw out there the question, name a good deep cut by Black Sabbath, specifically Ozzy era Black Sabbath. And we got some great responses. I voted for Junior's Eyes off the Never Say Die album. And you guys really chimed in with some great ones here. The Thrill of It All off of Sabotage, says Sam. Good one, Sam. Yep, I agree with you. Cornucopia, yep, sure. Chris says Wheels of Confusion. Nice one, Chris. Rob Dukes, from formerly of Exodus, currently of Generation Kill, saying The Thrill of It All. That's a great one. Ben Smith saying Wheels of Confusion, Looking for Today. All good ones. Chal says All Moving Parts. Mayor McCheese, Hole in the Sky. I don't know if Hole in the... Yeah, I guess Hole in the Sky is a deep cut. Air Dance, The Thrill of It All. A lot of people saying The Thrill of It All. All Moving Parts, You Can't Change Me from Technical Ecstasy. Symptom of the Universe, which I wouldn't consider a deep cut myself. Megalomania, great one. The Writ, Hole in the Sky. I'm just going through all these. The Writ, I feel like The Writ is getting the most votes here. Megalomania, again. Symptom of the Universe, a personal favorite, definitely the first thrash song. I don't hear that at all. I feel like the first thrash song is Fast as a Shark by Accept, but that's just me. All Moving Parts, again, yeah, a lot. The Writ, wow, so many votes for The Writ. Abby says Changes. Again, Abby, I don't know if that's a deep cut, not for me personally, but definitely an amazing tune. Love it. A Hard Road off of Never Say Die. Now, that is a great one. That came in by Devil Horns Up. Love that tune. Megalomania. Backstreet Kids. Oh, yeah, that's an interesting one. And it goes on and on. You can read all the Killing Yourself to Live. You can read all the responses on my Twitter feed. And that'll do it. Let's end with The Writ by Black Sabbath. Little Aussie era Sabbath to take us out. Support me on Patreon, guys. PayPal donations are encouraged. Buy a t-shirt for $15, a Talking Metal face mask, stay safe with that. For $18, just hit up my PayPal, which is in the show notes for today's episode, which you can get right on your podcasting app. Just look at all the show notes, a bunch of links in there, a bunch of ways to support me. This has been episode 899 of the Talking Metal podcast. This is The Writ by Black Sabbath. See you next time.